Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances. We're talking about working money doesn't suck.
And no tagline, brother? I mean, giving the listeners the short end of this. And you can find it.
That was the brief tagline. I shortened it up this week. Stop hating.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. I'm just saying, I was on the edge of my seat. Follow our individual accounts at the Marcus Garrett with one T on Twitter, two T's on Instagram, and you can find Rich at I am Rich Jones.
Yes. Oh. Yeah. So
you are also up.
Yeah. So clearly we're a little rusty since this is the first episode that we're recording at our computers in like over a month now. But anyway. Sure. If you've been enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe and hit us with a review on Apple Podcasts. This helps us stay up there in the rankings, which means we reach more people. And if we reach more people, we help more people. If you don't know how to leave a review, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review.
And speaking of reviews, this week's comes from Popcorn Finance. 5 stars, a down-to-earth conversation on finances. And look for Popcorn Finance. You started out as well in your iTunes.
Apple Podcast,
I always get
bro. It's an Apple Podcast.
There we go. Look for Popcorn Finance and Apple Podcast. He's also on Twitter and Instagram. I've interacted with this young man both online and offline. Rich and Marcus put out a show that feels like you're sitting in a conversation with friends. They speak about finances in a way that is approachable and easy to understand. Keep up the great work! Exclamation mark. Used correctly, I might add.
Yeah, appreciate that, Popcorn Finance. Cool brother. Met him at the Podcast Movement Conference. Appreciate the 5-star love. And yeah, again, paychecksandbalances.com/review if you don't know how to make that happen, but we encourage you all to jump in there and give us the 5 stars. So it's been a pretty crazy stretch, even though we took some downtime to get our minds right. I mean, of course, we spent a lot of time preparing to speak at Podcast Movement, and I've had all sorts of other stuff going on. And this is the first episode that we're recording since we've been back, which I mentioned up top, but I'm just going to say that again. And also, over this stretch, I did something I've never done before.
What's that, sir?
So there was a day, and it was just before Labor Day weekend, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and I was still feeling sick. And that's another thing. I came back from Podcast Movement, was sick as hell for like over a week. And it was Friday, and I was like, I'm going to do something this long weekend. I'm not just going to sit home staring at the ceiling and coughing. So on Saturday, booked a trip to Hawaii on Sunday, was on a flight to Hawaii on Sunday night, was on the beach in Hawaii, and got like three days of quality sun and experience, like on the whim. So, and no pun to your previous name, but I've never taken a last minute trip like that before. So I felt like I was renewed. I felt like I was living life on the edge, but I was really just kind of living life on the beach. But it was important to get that break, man.
This is your first time to Hawaii?
Yeah, I never been to Hawaii before. I greatly underestimated how long the flight was. I was like, "Oh, California to Hawaii, you know, that's probably going to be like
skip."
Yeah, you know, it's going to be like a couple hours. It was like 5 hours of travel. And then I had to take 2 different flights. Then on the second flight, I had a seat that I've never had before where I couldn't even see outside. I was just in front of like the jet thing. Like there was no view, just literally in front of the jet. And I was like, okay, that's what I get for booking this trip last minute. But yo, Hawaii is mad nice. Stayed on Kauai, which, as I discovered, is the quiet island. It's also the cougar island, the older people island. I noticed very few kids running around, but I was also happy about that.
So in that scenario, you were the kid.
I was the kid. It felt like that everywhere I went. And then there's also the experience of going places and eating by myself, and you get people like, so you waiting for somebody? It's like, no, I'm just enjoying my freaking meal. Like, leave me alone. I'm trying to eat this burger with like 6 toppings on it.
See, there's still hope for us older millennials.
There is, man.
Someone called us a senior millennial the other day, and it was a compliment. It was in a list of compliments, and I stared at that for an uncomfortable long time.
Yeah, I saw that too, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to let it go. I'm sure they mean that in a nice way, you know, because we're in that 34, 35 range, back hurting. More gray hair is sprouting up, by the way. I've noticed that over the past 2 weeks. I'm not sure what's changed. I haven't felt extra stressed, but I've noticed more gray hairs. It's kind of offensive.
We barely made it. White Fang. So White Fang was my first gray hair, at least the first gray hair that I noticed. He's still like egregious. Like he always the first to show up. He's the longest. He's the longest hair in my beard. And my girl like thinks it's hilarious. She's like always got her eye on it. She points it out in FaceTime. So I don't really know how I feel about it. But I will say one thing that I have noticed is I'm always tired. Like, I'm just always tired. I don't know if this is like a phase. I'm like, I get 8 hours of solid sleep. I'm still tired the second I open my eyes until sometime before I close my eyes. Naps have come. They have roared back with revelation and importance in my life. So I don't know what that's about. That might be the older millennial thing. But apparently I need to go to Kauai so I can re-experience my youth, get my groove back.
Yeah, I definitely felt like a youngin. And I had someone actually call me kid, which felt pretty good in a disrespectful way.
Nice. He's better than boy.
Yeah, man. And so we've also got some speaking opportunities come up. So you want to talk about that a little bit? And so, by the way, for those who were like, it's been 4 minutes and you haven't gotten into the main topic, we've been off for a while. So deal with it.
Yeah, it is what it is. That's what those little 15-second fast-forward buttons are for. Hopefully you heard this, though. International Podcast Day, September 30th, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That is 10 p.m. Central and 11 Eastern. I'm getting a little confused. I'm trying to jump coast in my head. I believe I will confirm this, although you can see the show notes, that I actually will be speaking live from Paychecks and Balances. I think it's one of those things where you sign in from your social media. But whatever the case may be, we'll get you that information. Also, we'll be speaking at FinCon in Dallas this year. It's a financial conference in October. And we're also scheduling some other appearances on podcasts near you.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking to FinCon. So we're talking about how to grow a money podcast without being an expert. So neither of us got certifications. We don't purport to be experts. And a lot of people have asked us how we've started the show, grown the show without having all of these certifications and letters behind our name. So looking forward to that. Should be a good time. And I think that'll make our fourth time seeing each other in person.
Hey, man, I've actually lost track, man. But that sounds about right. I appreciate you saying that, too, because the speaking topic for International Podcast is boys to money, from relationship bloggers to financial podcasters. So boys to money. You can check it out.
Yeah, that's a great name, by the way.
Appreciate that, sir.
And so speaking of FinCon, we recorded with today's guest, Tyrone Jackson, at the FinCon booth. We'll give him an intro at the start of the interview. But this conversation is focused on all things money. And he also shared a few fun facts, one of which leads me to keep confusing his name for something else. But that'll make more sense when you hear the actual episode.
It's an entertaining one, ladies and gentlemen. This conversation with Tyrone Jackson, the wealthy investor. Hope you enjoy.
All right. So we're joined by stock market trader and best-selling Amazon.com author Tyrone Jackson, a.k.a. The Wealthy Investor. Thanks for joining us, Tyrone.
Well, thank you. I am truly, truly excited to be here.
Yeah, it was great catching up with you yesterday. We were in the speaker lounge chatting it up. You were dropping that knowledge and we knew we had this recording slot. So we were like, yo, we got to get you on the podcast.
Well, thank you.
So before we start talking a little bit about the money side of things, talk a little bit about how you grew up, where you grew up, you know, a little background story.
Sure. I was raised by a single mother in federally subsidized housing in a part of New York City called Staten Island. Okay. And it's really quiet, but it was a very nice place to be raised and it was safe. And my mother struggled to pay the bills every single month. And I couldn't understand why. There was just wasn't more than enough money to go around. But she used to tell me that's just the way life is.
Yeah.
Right. And she used to tell me the best thing that you can actually do in life is get a job where you can make overtime. But she used to then say, the more you make, the more they take, meaning the IRS. So you're going to get a job, make overtime, but you're going to get screwed because they're going to hit you up with all these taxes.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's life. And there was just something, for reasons that I really can't explain, that caused me to reject that. And I just became naturally curious about who had money and why. And that was really the beginning of how my wealth consciousness started to seed itself and then bloom.
Got it.
So when you say bloom, about what age was that you said, I want to prove or find a different reality for myself?
Well, I think interesting, probably around 14, 15, because that's when you start to want stuff.
That's not, like, we're be, not
beyond
about
just
that,
like, but a game, right? You're like, I want those sneakers and I want a bike and I want, and that's when your parents, or at least my parents, were like, wait a minute. Those are big ticket items, right? So, like, you're going to have to get a job or work it out because we just can't be buying bikes and stereo equipment because, like, that's what you feel that you're ready for. So the rule in my house was, we have no money. Don't ask me for anything, right? So that was like a mantra. Like, I would want this. No. Before you tell me what you want, just remember the rule. We don't have any money. Right. So don't ask me for anything. So then I became, that heightened my curiosity even more because I would see people come from foreign countries and they would have like a car. That was like a big deal to like have a car. And then about 4 years later, they had a house. And I was like, well, how do you get from federally subsidized housing to a car and a house? I need to find out how that happens.
And did you think drugs?
Huh?
Did you think drugs?
Well, no, it wasn't drugs because it was really obvious that the guys who were dealing drugs, low level, high level, that path was easy. They were either going to get shot or go to jail. So I didn't want to get shot. Can't explain why. And I definitely didn't want to go to jail, right? Right. So there had to be another avenue. And that's what I set out to explore.
Dope.
So how did you figure it out? Did you talk to them? Did you, I guess, how did you answer those questions?
Well, this is really interesting because my father didn't live with us, but he used to get millions of dollars for minority businesses through government grants. He really knew how to write grants. So I would spend time with him and he goes, I just got $1 million for this company. I was like, wow, how much did you get? He's like, no, I didn't get anything. I just got the money for them. I'm like, well, that's weird. So because I didn't have anyone to ask, this is a little old fashioned and strange. I actually went to Barnes and Noble and bought a book. So I would take my allowance or whatever, and I would go get these money books because a book was like, you know, a gateway to a whole world that you didn't know about.
So let me ask, do you remember that first book?
I remember the first book that I purchased. It actually wasn't a money book. It was a book by Dale Carnegie called How to Win Friends and Influence People, right? And then I bought some real estate books like How to Invest in Real Estate. And then I knew that there was this thing called the stock market, but like you had to have a lot of money for that. So I wasn't interested in that. So I got started putting $100 a month into a mutual fund. Mm. Ooh. Because I read in a book that mutual funds was like a way to get ahead. And I had $100 and I put money in a mutual fund. And then I just started watching that fund.
So let me ask, because that might strike a few people. I'm not sure. Where did you find that first $100? So you say $100 a month. To some people, that's going to be a lot of money. That might be all the money they have each month.
Well,
left over.
Well,
excuse me.
You know, what I ultimately discovered was that people who are wealthy have certain habits, right? So wealth is a feeling first. When you start to feel like I got $100 someplace that I don't need, that's money working for me. So I wanted that feeling first. And then I knew that if you just kept putting money into something that has a tendency to grow, you're going to have more money. So the habit was just $100. And I read in one of this book, actually, a guy named Charles J. Givens wrote a book called Wealth Without Risk. He's no longer around, but it was like 50 things you could do to start wealth building. He goes, if you put $100 into an account that gains interest, you have $100 worth of wealth. Mm. So I had $100. I put in that account. I'm like, man, I'm on my way. Right? Because I had $100 working for me. Hmm. And then my goal was to have 200 and then 700. And by the time I hit I'll never forget walking through in New York City Rockefeller Center. I was 17. I had $700 in the bank and like $200 in a mutual fund. And I just kept saying to myself, I'm building my empire.
Yeah.
Because like $700 excess in a bank at that time was huge.
Balling.
I was balling. I was truly balling. So I was excited. Because I had $700 that was working for me, plus the money in the mutual fund. I had that feeling. I was in the game. Little did I know, the game was much larger, and I would have a lot more money than that in my future.
So at what point did you realize you wanted to be an entrepreneur, though? Because you're working for yourself, and there's something I want to talk about. So we'll talk about it at the back end of the show. There's something really interesting that you did, but at what point were you like, you know what? I'm going into business for myself. Going to make this happen.
Well, a couple things happened in between because I was a natural born performer. So I was doing theater after school and all that. And I always knew that I would be a performer for a living.
All right. So I'm going to change what I said. Let's talk about it now. So,
okay.
So I saw that you were a voice actor or a voiceover actor. So how did you get into that?
Well, I started out appearing in television commercials. So I had gotten an agent, headshots, appearing in television commercials. Now, the way you make your money in TV commercials, if you're fortunate enough to get booked in one, you get residuals. So I started making residuals. Like, I remember I shot my first commercial when I was 17, and the residual checks started to come. And, you know, there was always something in me that said, I should be making money while I'm sitting at home. I can't explain why, but I always felt that way. So I had these checks coming in from one day's worth of work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and then when you join the union, if you're shooting and you make overtime, the money is like really good. So I learned the business of commercials and commercial acting, and that's how I made my money. And then someone says, you should go into the field of voiceovers. I was like, what's that? They say, you know that voice that comes in at the end of the commercials? Yeah, well, actors do that. So I started studying voiceover technique, and I became what we call the legal voice of a company called McDonald's. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I was going to say, so were you the, and this thing, okay, you blah, 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 blah,
yes,
blah, blah, blah,
this is how I made my living. Void were prohibited by law. Prices may vary at participating McDonald's. Like, I was, there was like six of us, and I did it for mostly the urban market. But I had always wanted to be in movies, and so I started doing little movie roles. And then I did a film that everybody seems to remember, a movie called Lean on Me with Morgan Freeman.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I played kind of like the class clown in that movie. And then I went back to voiceovers. And because I kept making chunks of money, I knew I should be doing something with these chunks above and beyond mutual funds. Because it was clear that was not going to get me rich. And there's a wonderful saying when it comes to getting rich, which is success leaves clues. So people who are rich, they have written it down somewhere and explained how they got there. I just needed the books that explained it to me.
That's crazy, man. So you mentioned Lean on Me, which is dope. I want to pull that up right now while we're talking, but that's not going to work. But are there other commercials, things that we might be able to find on YouTube?
Oh,
that you've
I
done?
Did so many. I mean, I did, when I was in that phase of my career, Anheuser-Busch, Chevrolet, Coca-Cola, Russell Simmons produced a show on HBO called Def Comedy Jam.
Yeah.
I was the promo announcer. This week on Def Comedy Jam, Russell jams with.
Wow,
so I used
man.
To do that for HBO. And I mean, I was just so fortunate to have worked for so many of the big advertisers and represent them vocally.
Nice, man. Okay, so you did that. And then what was next?
Well, I had a larger chunk of money by now. And I saw in these late night TV shows, like, real estate is where it's at. You want to buy a house, fix it up, and rent it to other people. The only problem is I had the money, and I partnered with a friend of mine. So I put down some money, he put down some money, and neither one of us knew how to repair anything, right? So, like, a pipe would burst, and we'd be like, do you know how to do that? I don't know how to do that. I grew up in the city. I don't know. The roof. Go up on the roof. I don't know how to go up on the roof. I'm not going up on the roof. Why did we buy this? I don't know, because we're supposed to rent it out and be making a lot of money, right? So, after about a year or two of owning this property, it didn't work out. We sold it for a loss. And I had gone to see my father, who was in his 80s now, spend some time with him. I said, Dad, this real estate thing, I don't know how you get rich with it. He goes, oh, you want to learn the stock market. And my favorite show growing up was Scooby-Doo. So I just gave him that look of like, okay.
Yeah.
And he goes, when you come back next month, I'm going to get you some books, and some audio tapes, and you're going to learn the stock market. And I was like, okay. He goes, because that's your thing. I said, okay.
Along those lines, and I've heard this, I guess, advice, if you will, it's invest in what you know. So do you think, is it real estate that didn't work out for you, or is it because you were investing in something that you didn't know?
That is a great question. I understood the economics of real estate. I didn't have the mechanics of how to repair things and maintain homes and understand electrical systems. And it wasn't that I was incapable. I just didn't like it. Right? I mean, who wants to repair a toilet when your tenant calls or put in a new microwave? I just didn't take to that. I have friends who love that.
I would have been using duct tape.
Yes, you would have used duct tape, which is the magical cure for everything, by the way. That's a whole nother show. So this stock market thing, like, how hard is it to buy something at $40 and sell it at $45? And you do it online. So I was like, well, that's interesting, because I could be sitting at home. This thing is moving. I buy it. I sell it. That's called trading. Investing means I'm going to buy shares in a company and I'm going to hold on to it for 2, 3, 4, 5 years and let it go up in value. So when I learned, the first thing I learned was there was a difference between trading for fast money and investing for the longer term. and that I could actually do both in an account if I just had $500. What was interesting is I had access to $500, and I tell people today, what do you do with your income tax refund? Most people spend it because they have never learned how to invest it, because they never get a financial education.
And so that's a great segue. So we primarily talk to millennial professionals. I mean, it's 25 to 44. I don't want to forget our Gen X people, you know, who are always like, yo, you talk about millennials, but what about us? We're listening too.
Right.
And when it comes to investing for a lot of people, and even really myself at this point, the extent of their investing is their 401k. Enrolling in that, set it, forget it, you know, let their company manage it. So is what advice do you have for people who may have a little bit of money to spend, or maybe they don't, but they really want to get into investing, but they're intimidated by all of the complex terms, the risk factor? What do you say to those people who just want to kind of get things going?
Okay, first of all, I'm not the brightest guy in the world.
Yeah.
But if you went to the fourth grade, all wealth is fourth grade math.
Huh.
And
that makes me feel really dumb.
Comes down to. So when I'm doing a live seminar, I go, how many people went to the fourth grade? How many people graduated the fourth grade? You could be rich, because all wealth is fourth grade math. You're buying something for 40. You're willing to sell it at 41. That is a $1 gain, right? So if you can count from 40 to 41, you are in. And so the stock market, like everything, has its complexities, but at its basis, it's really simple. Okay. So all I need is $500, and I can open an account on E-Trade, TD Ameritrade, Charles Schwab, $500. And that's due in part to the fact that the internet has really changed everything. Mm. It's given access to Wall Street in a way that we didn't have 15, 20 years ago, where you could never go have a broker unless you had $30,000. Mm. But now $500 and your income tax refund gets you in the game. And what people need to know is, then what do I buy? Then what do I invest in? Then what am I trading? And that's where your financial education starts.
Got it. And so for people too, that could be your performance bonus from work. So, you know, you got a 10%, 15% performance bonus. You get a sign-on bonus even that's not supposed to be for your moving expenses. You could start with that.
Easily.
You know, you get a birthday gift or whatever it is. That's money that you could easily get in with. Because most people, they probably still think, I need to have $2,000-$3,000. And actually, I'm not going to front. I was thinking the same thing myself. Like, okay, you know, I got to have these $1,000 to put in. But 500, you know, for some people that may be a struggle, but for a lot of folks who have been working for a little bit of time, that's actually not that much money if you focus on saving it.
No, it's $100 out of every paycheck for 5 weeks. You're in. It's as simple as that. And people go, well, I'm not sure if I can find the money. It's like, yeah, but you have an iPhone, right? So like, you had the money to buy that and some gear attached to the iPhone. You have an iPad, right? Okay, well, what if you stopped buying less of those things and took the money that you were putting towards clothes, a club on a Friday night, go to the club less? Were you going to drop $150? And you could mysteriously find that money. Like, we all have that money. It's a matter of prioritizing.
And along those lines about the where you're putting your money, do you have any advice on someone who's dealing with debt, student loans versus investing? A lot of questions we have come in is, what do I pay first?
Right. Here's now, everybody, money management is a whole nother thing. I say, your job is to eliminate debt and create wealth at the same time. So pay, maybe 1 month you'll pay the minimum on a credit card, and then you'll take the rest of the money and you'll put it in your E-Trade or TD Ameritrade account, for example, right? So that way you're feeding the wealth side while reducing the debt. I find that a lot of people make the mistake of, I'm just going to get out of debt. Well, that's not a financial plan that's going to sustain you. You want to get out of debt and start this new habit, because wealth is nothing more than a series of positive habits. Start this new habit at the same time. Now, here's really what's really important. As you're paying down your debt and putting $100, you see, wealth has to be a priority. So you're prioritizing debt reduction and wealth building at the same time. Why is this important? Because you want that feeling.
Right.
You want that feeling that you are moving forward. And as you're reducing debt, that money now works for you at the same time. And wealth is a feeling first. And when you get that feeling, you get hooked on being wealthy. Because it feels good.
Hell of a drug.
Right, exactly.
So also along these lines, you mentioned putting money in an investment account while you're also reducing debt. What do you think about the whole idea of the emergency fund, having a savings account, you know, how much money you need to stock away? Because you've heard you should have 3 months stocked away, 6 months stocked away. If you want to become an entrepreneur, you should have a year stocked away.
Yes.
What's your theory on that in terms of the savings account that's maybe earning 0.0006% interest?
Well, there's no right or wrong. How you want to design your financial life is totally up to you. I think if you can put $100 away in a savings account and $100 away each month in an investment account, you might not even know what stocks you want to own. It's all about that feeling. Now, a lot of your audience, when they really sit down and they think about it, they have more than $500 a month, right, to put into an investment account. But anything that makes you feel good first is the key. I just say don't just focus on debt reduction. Focus on wealth creation, because you can do two things at the same time.
And as far as the entrepreneur side, for a lot of our listeners are either having a passive hustle or a side hustle. What are your thoughts on incorporation? I don't know if you want to get too much in the tax side, but what is the smart way for handling your money as far as a business goes?
Okay. So here's where we have to change our thinking. Okay. Because your wealth, all of the money that you will attract in your life, is totally based on what you believe to be possible. So my mother said, get a job where you make overtime. I rejected that as a belief system. It just didn't feel right to me. I felt like I was created to be a multimillionaire, right? And I couldn't explain why, but that was my feeling. So we have to have a shift in our consciousness and our beliefs about what is possible. So, for example, you guys were kind enough to invite me on this show. I think if you are listening to this show right now, you are in the right place at the right time. The universe has sat you down and you are listening to this episode for a reason, because it's time to go forward and shift your consciousness. So even before we get to whether I set up an LLC or a corporation, we have to have that belief that you were meant to have money. Why? Not just for you, so that you can help other people, your family, and generational wealth starts with your beliefs. So I'm divorced. I have two daughters. I tell them all the time, you're going to be so rich in the stock market. You're going to make so much money and help so many people. Now, of course, we travel around the world. We have a house on 10 acres of land. And I say, do you see all of this? The reason you're going to be rich is because your dad is the teacher. Now, they don't know this, and I hope they're not listening. Yeah. But I am programming them for success. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely makes sense. So along those same lines, you were talking about when we were talking together, you were talking about this concept of the billionaire mindset.
Yes.
And the systems that people got to put in place. So right. Can you talk a little bit more about that? And you kind of got into it a little bit, but what separates the millionaire mindset from the billionaire mindset?
Okay, first of all, anybody can be a millionaire these days. Why? Because success leaves clues. So all you have to do is study other millionaires. How did they get there? Secondly, we have the internet. So being able to start a business on the internet, you can start a business on the internet for less than $1,500. But one of the things, again, you're not going to be successful unless you have a particular mindset. So here's the first rule of being a millionaire. You ready? You got to think residual income, right? They keep telling us in the world that we want a job and we want to work for a living. That's not going to get you rich. You want to create something that has passive income to it on a regular and consistent basis.
And can you break that down a little bit for what does residual income mean?
Okay, residual income means that you put energy into something once or twice and it just kicks you back dollars unlimited. You put a little bit more energy into it and more income is coming back to you. So I teach a strategy in the stock market called covered call writing. So that means that I'm going to buy a stock, right, inside my account, and I'm going to sell someone who doesn't know me the right to buy that stock away from me at a higher price. So I buy my shares, and essentially I say to someone in the marketplace, hey, would you like to buy these shares for me at a higher price? They say yes. They're going to pay me a fee known as a premium to buy that stock away from me at a higher price. That higher price is called the strike price. So I could buy a stock at 42, go inside my online brokerage account, find someone who wants to buy the stock away from me at 43, at the 43 strike, and I can make $1 a share for selling that right to someone else. Now, if you come from a working class background, you're thinking to yourself, who are these people? Why would they just do that? Well, the stock market is one game and 100 ways to play it. So that is a form of using the stock market as residual income. And I realize for some people, it's like, this is mind-blowing that you could do that, right? But we're here on the show to blow people's minds, right? So that's right, the whole point. Okay, so I buy the stock at 40 or 41, and I'm willing to sell it to someone at 42, and I sell that right? That is a form of residual income. If I do that with 1,000 shares, I make $1,000 in 3 minutes for selling rights. So that's how it works in the stock market.
So I think some people, possibly present company, are going to be a little intimidated by this. How do you know when this is something you should take on yourself or something you should farm out to either a brokerage firm or a third party?
Oh, no. This only takes 3 minutes to make the $1,000. There's nothing to farm out. You log in your account. You find the stock that you want to sell the cover call on or trade. It takes 3 minutes. You make $1,000 on 1,000 shares. You are done. For 3 weeks, that person can make up their mind whether they want to buy the stock away from you. So this is something that you want to do. So my students, you know, obviously we do it with larger amounts of money. They say, Tyrone, I made $7,000 in 3 minutes. I go, yeah, I know. Because I taught them to expect residual income. And they say, I get to do this again next month. I say, no, you get to do it for the rest of your life. And they go, how come no one has ever taught us this? And I go, I don't know. But I'm Tyrone Jackson, a wealthy investor. Welcome to the new world, right?
So the billionaire mindset, what makes that different?
Okay. So a millionaire thinks in residual income. Okay. You'll notice there's a woman who's very successful by the name of Oprah Winfrey. She's not flipping houses and fixing them up on the weekend and reselling them.
Shout out to HGTV.
Necessary plug. Okay, so Oprah builds systems. So she started out with her syndicated talk show, selling the show, licensing the show to stations, and then so that made her $32 billion or whatever her numbers are. And then she started producing other programs and doing the same thing. Because billionaires build systems. So she owns the Dr. Oz show, Dr. Phil, Rachel Ray, and then a network. So the reason that she will always be a billionaire is because she builds systems. Now, here's what's exciting for your audience. You start out with something that produces residual income. And then instead of thinking like a millionaire, once you learn how to think like a millionaire, your next step is to think like a billionaire and make a system. A system that you can sell to other people online, or, you know, you basically become a system seller. Not you, but other people can sell systems. And it's powerful and it's exciting. So there's someone in your audience going, this sounds like me, because it feels right. And wealth is a feeling first.
Now, is there an example? So again, we're mainly talking to people, white collar professionals. They're working. They're like, working this grave shift. I don't want to do this no more.
Right.
Systems. Can you give an example of maybe like a side hustle or something that maybe one of your clients have done to kind of start building that side income and start working
toward? Obviously, the easiest side income is trading in the stock market, right? So how many times can you buy and sell ticker symbol KO, which is Coca-Cola? It's a stable company. It moves in a range. I can buy and sell that stock over and over and over. My other favorite stock right now to trade is MasterCard. Every stock has its own ticker symbol. Ticker symbol's MA. You could look it up on Yahoo Finance, right? So I buy and sell that stock every time it moves a dollar, right? That is a system. Now, what I do with my mindset is I sell my system to my students, right? So the more students I have, the more people benefit from that system. So it is possible, because money's nothing but energy, right? I know we think of it as coins and all of that, but essentially it's an exchange of energy. I sell you my system. You make a lot of money with my system. You help a lot of people. So the more people I sell my system to, the more people work. Now, if I want to set up a whole nother business, I don't have to be the face of it. I can hire another expert who sells their system, but I own their system. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm trying to figure out where to take my company now, because I'm just helping people to become rich. But maybe I hire another expert who just does the mindset part of life. And then I hook them up with a system that they create, and we're selling two systems, right? Cool. So the next step is to get 8 other experts, and now we're selling 10 systems, but who owns the publishing? Who owns the websites? Who owns the webinars? I do. So I would be duplicating myself, and people would, they'd be connecting with the expert, and I would own all of the publishing, all of the webinar revenue, blah, 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 blah. So that's a system. But that's $100 million system.
Yo, this guy's a kingpin, man.
But the opportunity exists for all of us if we have the right mindset, the right belief system, and then we find a system that's right for us.
Awesome, awesome, man. So, yo, it's been great having you on the podcast. We've been laughing, kicking it, dropping knowledge. Can't wait to put this one out for the people. So tell folks where they can find you, man.
If you're really interested in the stock market, you can go to thewealthyinvestor.net, and there's a free ebook called Trading Stocks for Wealth. It's free. Just download it at thewealthyinvestor.net. Free. I had to buy the books when I first started. Now you can go to the website, and I'll explain to you the whole system in stock markets. If you just want to download it, that would be the best place.
And you on social media anywhere?
I'm on social media, big on Facebook. We're doing a lot of Facebook Lives these days where I answer questions live about the stock market. So you can always join us at The Wealthy Investor on Facebook.
Cool, man. Yo, so again, Tyrone, it's been dope having you on the podcast, man. Thanks for joining us.
Well, great meeting you guys, and thank you. I really appreciate being here.
Awesome.
Yo, man, I'm trying to be a billionaire.
A Billy. I'm feeling like I'm definitely going to download that ebook. I'm going to get on it. I'm about to get my investing and then my trading on. I feel like I want to step into the trading game, but I'm definitely motivated. I feel like I'm doing the hand clap, you know, got the energy levels up. So I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. I hope y'all feel the same way.
So I actually was thinking that I'm definitely going to take my performance review or my performance bonus for this year and use part of that to start my investment account. So not my 401k investing, but my actual, here's the money. And I'll probably do a few thousand of that bonus and just say, here's my money to actually start investing and going with what he said is probably the easiest passive income stream, and then see where it goes from there. Now, of course, I'm not expecting that after 2 months, I'm going to be a billionaire. You know, hopefully I've at least gotten like 30 or 40 bucks extra, but looking forward to finally getting started with that, man. I feel like that's the one area that I've yet to tackle and I feel the least knowledgeable about. I have no shame in admitting that, which is probably why I don't talk much about investing on the show.
Yo, I'm definitely going to put these systems in place. Yeah, that'll be the word of the day. And actually, yeah, I'm stumbling into some money. Now, old me, I got offered a discount. As some of y'all know, I've been trying to get to the third floor. So I got offered a discount to move into the first floor. I got offered another discount if I moved into the third floor, but I had to do it like this week. They were like, or else. And so I get $500 back on next month's rent. Now, old me was like trying to do rim conversion and how many gold chains I can get that. Now, how many teeth can I put in my head that are platinum or silver? And I was like, you know what? Let's slow it down. Let's put that in the savings account. But instead of the savings account, maybe I need to put that in the investment account.
Might be the wave, man.
Might be the wave. A Billy.
And so we also have a micro ad this week. This one was submitted long ago, like literally before we went on hiatus. Stuff was blowing up, going crazy. And so we're just now getting to it. And it reads, travel Wookiee. I almost called him a Wookiee.
I know.
Travel Rookies and Wanderlust. Listen to the Travel Guy Desk podcast, a podcast dedicated to making travel easy for everyday people like you and me, available on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. So the way he spelled this out, and I didn't confirm this with GQ50 at GQ50 on Instagram and Twitter before we recorded this, but it's travel space. And then in parentheses, it has guy, then DES. I'm sure there's a story behind that. I'm sure it's something probably simple that other people who hear that are like, yeah, we totally get what that means. You're the slow one. And you can also go ahead.
I'm thinking that's the Travel Guides podcast, but it's saying guy, like play on guy. just thought I'd clarify.
All right. So, yeah. I'm like the travel guy, Des. I'm like, Des is in Spanish because that's a country they travel to. But doesn't that mean like of? I don't know. So you can also check out the podcast, soundcloud.com/thetravelguides, GUYDES.
And shout out to our platinum patrons. I think I'm saying that right. Now I'm all confused. Chisholm O, Stephanie S, Taro C, we appreciate ya.
Yo, man, I almost want to go back and do that travel guides thing over, but I'm going to let that cook. And so if you enjoyed today's episode or found it useful, be sure to share. As we said up top, the more people we reach, the more people we help.
And don't forget to join our email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email. You'll receive our weekly newsletter where we share interesting articles we've discussed, actionable work and money tips, and much more.
And thanks to everyone for listening. Also, I hate you if you send me an email for messing up the travel guide. Yo, that's going to haunt me like all this week, man. Like, it, now I'm looking at it. It's so simple.
I was actually wondering where you were going with it. I was like, he's making this extremely complicated. But I thought like he was going to like come home with some like joke and it's going to be a brrrr.
No,
like,
no. You know? It was simply because of the parentheses. I was like, travel guide, yes. I mean, if there was no parentheses there, I would have. Anyway. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you have questions you'd like us to potentially cover on the show, email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace. The Travel Guides.